Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. I have a feature recorded 5 years ago in 2019 at Monterey, and it's someone who just recently published his 1500th podcast. I do have to admit, there's a heck of a bunch of things I've recorded over the years that are still sitting on my hard drive, and this Marlboro Challenge with Michael Andretti, Bobby Rahal, and Rick Mears, those who won the Marlboro Challenge All-Star events, which ran from 1987 through 1992. There's some other winners in there as well, but spoke with those fine trio, spoke with them in Monterey about this really phenomenal thing that was done for a very brief period. Was fortunate to be there for a couple of them. Similar to what we have this weekend, the Thermal Club in Thermal, California, with IndyCar's Million Dollar Challenge, which actually pays the winning driver $500,000. Very similar in concept to the old Marlboro Challenge. Some differences, though. With what we have here, it is a heat race-based participation at Thermal. There are a couple of qualifying sessions that are going to take place on Saturday, a couple of heat races Sunday morning. The fastest six drivers from those two heat races go on into that 12-driver finale. They'll go for 20 laps on Sunday, broadcast on NBC, halftime in between. And again, the winner takes home $500 and descending amount of money afterwards. We had with the Marlboro Challenge a little bit different. So instead of it being at the front part of the season, this was always towards the end. They had a qualifying aspect to it, not an actual on-track qualifying aspect, but they filtered the participants through those who won races during the year or on pole or similar. And so what you ended up with was truly the best drivers of the year, all going for significant cash prizes. Back then, might have been $250,000 to start. I think it was up over almost $400,000 by the end. If you do a bit of inflation calculation from back then to now, it was a decent amount of money. Did all of this in backup cars, which were allowed back then. And so what you would have was for entertainment and for glory and chasing money, we would have the biggest names in IndyCar go like mad, race each other, knock each other around a little bit, and go for that money. Did that on Saturday in cars that, again, weren't their race cars for Sunday. Made things a lot easier, and it was pretty awesome back then. So speaking with these three about this back in 2019, the end mentioned, hey, could you imagine this happening today? And by and large, this is kind of sort of what is happening. So if you didn't know anything about the Marlboro Challenge, hopefully that's a good precursor here to let you know what we're about to speak about. Let's hear from those who make the show possible first, and then we will welcome in our esteemed guests. Time to say a big thank you to our show partners on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, starting with FAF Technologies, build-to-print composites manufacturing company. They're specializing in medium to large-scale automotive, motorsports, and military applications. Visit FAFTechnologies.com. It's P-F-A-F-F Technologies.com to learn more about their services and how they can benefit your business. Next, it's the Justice Brothers, makers of premium additives, lubricants, and cleaners, and servicing the automotive and motorsports industries for more than 85 years, with victories in all the biggest North American motor races, including the Indianapolis 500, the 24 Hours of Daytona. The Justice Brothers products are truly race-proven. Learn about their vast history and range of offerings at justicebrothers.com. If you're fond of awesome motor racing collectibles, including FAF Motorsports McLaren gear and goodies, pay a visit to torontomotorsports.com. And finally, we have a new online merchandise home for the podcast, thepruittstore.com, for all the show stickers, models, racing memorabilia I'm trying to sell and put towards our fund to buy a house is now live and rocking, thepruittstore.com. Gents, we're at a place here in Laguna Seca where I guess the second to last Marlboro Challenge race was held. We look every year when NASCAR has their All-Star race, big fanfare, etc. I guess there have to be a lot of modern IndyCar fans that don't know that once upon a time, for a six-year stretch, 87 to 92, IndyCar had its own all-star race. We'll get to the Mr. Andretti, Mr. Mears most memorable one. Bad memories for one of you. Let's just start with the general concept of this 1987 kicking off the Marlboro Challenge All-Star Race, Tamiami Park. What was your thought when you heard about this? Did you like the idea?
Loved it. Yeah. That was great.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it was something that brought more to the party, you know, something more to talk about, something more to get fans excited, even the teams excited, you know. It's another goal to, you know, everybody wanted to at least get that pole or win to get into the challenge. That was a big deal.
Yeah, it added to the other races.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It upped the ante across the board, besides paying well.
Love to see it
pay well. Pay very well.
And so we're
too
obviously
bad it doesn't, it went away, really. Well, it doesn't exist.
I was going to say,
it was a good premise.
We're in an era where tobacco money is no longer a part of things, but we certainly know that during this era, Marlboro wasn't afraid to throw some money down. This very first event in 87 in Florida, they set aside $730,000 for the purse. In today's money, I don't even know what that is, but it's
$7 million.
That's finishing second or third at Indy 500 type. Mm-hmm. So obviously, hopefully, you guys are making lots of money back then, well paid. But I also have to imagine, beyond this being a fun all-star race, there's some real money here too. Was that? I don't have that anymore, but was that an incentive at all?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
Big time. Yeah. You know, that was always in the back of your mind, you know? So, yeah, the money was big, and but there was still the pride thing as well.
Sure.
That was a biggie, you know? Well, not only for the drivers, but for the teams. You know?
And us as drivers, it's another race. That's what we're here for, is to race. So the more races, the merrier, in my book.
You know? What I liked about it is it gave you insight into the next day.
True.
Yeah.
It's a big race, because you're out there. If I was a guy who wasn't in the series, in the Marlboro Challenge, I'd be a little ticked off. Because these guys are getting a sneak peek.
That's true, too, yeah.
So the format was really interesting. It would take the championship leaders, effectively, the last year's champ, the Indy 500. I mean, this was, when we talk about an all-star race, no disrespect to those who weren't invited, but maybe what you were doing on Sunday in the race, some back markers, who knows what. This is really all the hunter killers together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that an aspect?
It is the creme de la creme.
Yep.
Absolutely.
How much did you like that aspect? Again, not as if you didn't fight each other like hell on Sunday, but this was real, you know, knives out type stuff.
Yeah, no question.
You know, being a short race, being a sprint race, it was, you know, you didn't pace yourself as much. I mean, I always had a pace no matter what the deal, just depending, I'd change the pace to fit the length of the race. But, you know, it's just a sprint race. You had to stand on it and go and you know, make everything count. And you didn't have the lap cars, the things, as many things that could interfere with the outcome. Yeah. So it was just all good all the way around.
So these races, again, these were short races. You know, here, I think in 91, it was 45 laps, something like that. The race here Sunday is 90. You were the winner of the first, Bob, at Tamiami Park. I think Boisel was on pole. It's not a statement we've said too many times in life, but regardless, Boisel was on pole. You ended up getting the lead. Tell us what it was like winning this. The first one.
You also got to remember, 87 was my second championship year.
Yeah.
And fighting Michael. And, you know, it had been a good year. I think I won three or four races at that point. So we had a good feel for that car. And my first year back with Lola, it was just a good car. It was, you know, we qualified well. Car felt good, and we were fortunate enough to win. And again, for me, it was all about anything you could do, any win. You know, you always want to win, right? Doesn't matter what it is. And being the group of drivers that you're driving against in that race, I mean, these were the guys. That was the top, and so you wanted to win because you wanted to make that statement about how you did against Michael, Mario, Rick. I think Al Sr. might have been in there. I'm not even sure who all was in there. Boisel, who was a pretty good driver.
Oh, yeah.
you know, I mean, it was, like I said, the creme de la creme. So to go out there and win it, and then, of course, you won a heck of a lot of money, too. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Michael, you won the second Marlboro Challenge also at Tamiami Park. I remember it was, it had been raining leading up to that. So the start of the race was in the wet. You and Little Al were... Tell us about that battle. Again, I'm just thinking classic IndyCar stuff. Michael and Little Al beating the hell out of each other. Yeah. What was that like?
No, that was good. It, you know, had some of my best races with Al. I love racing against him. And, yeah, I remember, and that was a bad year for me. I hadn't done Lux that year. And to finally have a shot at doing something, I think I only got, I got in there by having one pole, which was at Milwaukee. Yeah, so then, you know, at that point, you don't even think you have a shot because you're starting in the back. But then the weather, I think, helped out a lot. And, you know, we were in a position that, you know, there was no way Al was going to get by me. I don't care what I was going to say because I needed that win so bad. And actually, I think Al crashed on the last lap or something.
You know, yeah, you...
A little wide in the wet. And
You had worked your way forward, made the change from wets to slicks, you know, perfect timing. Yeah. And that was, like you said... Yeah. 88 might not have been the best year for that, you, but that was a nice...
Exactly. There's a nice way to finish it off and get into the next year, you know, so...
So in 89, Little Al won, moving here for the first time at Laguna. It's interesting that instead of having the same venue, they would start to alternate. So the next year, 90, moved to Nazareth. You started third, Rick.
Finally an oval.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for that.
You started third, fell back a little bit, worked your way forward. 100 lapper, right? I mean, it almost sounds like a, you know, Saturday night kind of dirt race.
That goes by in a hurry there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you ended up working, fighting with Mario. Emerson was there as well. What's the mindset for something like that in terms of, a sprint race? There's a lot of money on the line, et cetera, but compared to someone maybe going mindset for a full-length race, what does 100 lapper at Nazareth do for you approach-wise?
Well, I've always kind of used the same concept. You know, I know you got to finish the last lap to win the race, period. So I got to make sure I get there first. So it's kind of first half get to the second half get to the front if you aren't already there. And that holds true in just about any length race. You just, you scale it different, you know, on your intensity. And that's just the way I always ran it. But, you know, Nazareth, it was quick. It was, Nazareth was funny. It was... If you had a good car, it was a fun racetrack. But if you were struggling, it was a handful.
Long day.
And we had a good car there, so that made things a lot easier. But I just paced it and, you know, did our thing and tried to do it, you know, what we could do at the time we needed to.
So the most memorable Marlboro Challenge, 1991 Laguna Seca. So with the way things were set up, had you won, Rick, you stood to take home $425,000 for 45 laps.
I wasn't
laps.
Thinking about that at all.
Oh, no. No, that summer home you didn't buy. Yeah, that doesn't stick out at all. The two of you, Michael and Rick, that is the classic, the quintessential Marlboro Challenge race. So 45 laps, this guy here... In command.
Just dominated.
In command.
Yeah, everybody was saying, what happened? This is a road course.
Yeah, I'm like, the whole time, like, shit, he's really flying.
You know how it is. Yeah. The car does what you want it to do. The car was great.
Yeah.
It was really working well. Made life a little easier. But
So tell us about this Saturday at Laguna Seca 1991, where great field, deep field again. You, I don't want to say check out, but I mean, it was clear that it was going to be your day. Tell us about the final laps. What's going through your mind? We know what went through your mind coming out of the final corners.
Yeah.
But.
Well, you know, like I said, the car was great. And you know, I know at one point, I went back and watched a little of the replay. At one point, it stretched out to about a 6 or 7 second lead. And I was just basically controlling the pace on the car, you know, was what I needed, and because the car was so good that day. But then, you know, as we start getting to the end, of course, I'm not thinking about the money, but, you know, you don't want to make any mistakes as you get closer to the end. So, you know, so I'm taking a little off the pace, just making sure, and the gap's coming down.
And so, you know, I'm kind of keeping tabs on the gap and where Michael's at, and is he's getting closer. And I thought, okay, the last thing right toward the end of it, you know, I'm not going to give him a shot to dive bomb me in the hairpin. Mm-hmm. So the last lap, I picked up the pace a little more and, you know, really ran the thing hard down through the corkscrew and everything to make sure I had enough gap still that you couldn't do that. And so we get into the hairpin and like, oh, cool, this is all good. Off gear, come out of the corner, and the thing just dies. He just falls on his face. And I look in the mirror about the time it dies, and he just misses me. So my first thought was, damn, I shouldn't have gapped him. I should have stayed. He had hit me. And I didn't get any time to get going again. But it was just one of those things, you know, it happened. And, you know, luckily he did miss me, or third place would have won, probably. Yeah. But
who was third in the race?
Yeah, who was third?
I'm going to have to... Actually, I think it should be right in front of us there.
Oh, my glasses on.
Let me see.
Where'd you? I don't remember. I was third in 89 here. I know that.
Emo was third.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Emo was.
Little Al was fourth. Mario was fifth. Bobby was seventh.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened that day. That's not a normal either. Ray Hall finish.
That was 91?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's only a $250,000 hiccup, roughly.
So, Michael, you have lost races that were clearly yours. I'm not saying Marlboro Challenge 91 makes up for any of those. What's it like, though? Or tell us the mindset you were in at these latter stages.
Mindset is that I didn't have anything for Rick on that day, and I was just bringing it home second and, you know, coming in the last lap. You know, I'm still pushing hard because I noticed I was gaining on him. I didn't know if he was backing off or what, so you got to go for it. And I was pushing, and I knew I was gaining, and then, you know, when that happened, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it was a weird feeling. You know, I felt bad, you know, it's like you'll take it because I've given away so many that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, you feel bad for the guy that just gave it to you.
For about that long.
Yeah, exactly.
That's too bad. Thanks.
Yeah, right. No, I felt bad. I mean, I did, but I'll take it, like I said, because I've given them away. So, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Rick, you. I guess I still have to say, unfortunately, lead 42 of the 45 laps. You lead the 44th or 45th and 10 corner-ish type. What's your thought, Michael, when you see a car slowing down that you didn't expect to? And at what point in time did the, man, this is going to be a great check to cash thing run through your mind?
Well, I think the first thing is, you're like,
missing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was so close. I didn't have time to think. You know, I just reacted. And after, I'm like, oh my God, I won the race, you know? So it's like, yeah. And then it's like, well, the way I got it wasn't great, but, you know, but I'll take it, you know?
That day, I learned that early on, too, what you're talking about. You've lost in that way, too. And my first win at Milwaukee, you know, when Al ran out of fuel. And I went on, I ran out on the last corner and almost got beat. But I didn't feel like I won the race, you know, and I was kind of around about it. And so I was talking to Foyt not long after that. I was telling him, you know, about not feeling like you won. He said, he just started laughing. He said, are you kidding me?
Yeah. You take
you'll
it.
Lose more that way than you win. And he was right.
Yeah. You know, wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It happens.
Yeah.
That's racing.
Exactly.
So Emo won the final Marlboro Challenge in 92 at Nazareth. What comes to mind looking back at this, I think, kind of fun thing? I recall fans really looking forward to it because it was just such a, it was a celebration of the finest that we had to offer. Bob, what do you recall? Just the ceremony of it.
Well, what I really recall is what a great job Marlboro did.
Yeah.
I mean, they really promoted it. Tremendous support. Very professionally run. You know, I think that's, I'm not sure anybody else could really have done it as well. But no, I think every year you wanted to make the Marlboro Challenge, and every year it was a big deal.
Yeah,
it was a big deal to be a part of it, and the money was certainly, that was big money in those days. But it was also, again, just one more chance to win a race against the best of the best, and so it's it was something I think I made every year, so I was very pleased about that, and, you know, had a chance to win it and finish decent most of the times. Just so great, just a great, great series, and it's just kind of a shame, you don't have something like that today, because I think it just added so much value to the weekend to have this special race. And so, you know, maybe after this broadcast, somebody will
pick up. Yeah, there any sponsors out there that want to do this? Yeah. I think it'd be great for the series, big time.
You know, I think you get a lot out of it. I mean,
yeah, you do.
Marlboro Challenge, we're still talking saying Marlboro.
Yeah.
Every time you talk about it, you're talking about Marlboro.
Yeah.
So it worked for them, man.
Do you think that could exist today, Michael? And I ask that just knowing that things have changed a little bit. So a lot of what happened then would be the T-cars, right? You roll out, you know, many drivers would use their T-cars for the Marlboro Challenge, save the primary for the race. At least now, the way the rules are, you can only have one engine per car. So there could
that
be some logistical work, but...
They can get around it. I'm sure
you can make
somehow.
It
yeah, they could accommodate for it.
Yeah, you can make it work somehow.
Yeah.
Do you think this is something that... Since the folks in charge of IndyCar today, by and large, weren't here when we were doing this, do you think they might appreciate hearing just a general all-star mindset?
Actually, I mean, I'm going to bring that up to Jay, to be honest with you, because I hadn't really thought about it, and you know, like that, he needs to maybe start looking and see if we can.
It's
do
a good
like
show.
This.
You're always trying to figure out how to add to the show.
Exactly.
And like I said, we were talking about a while ago, is it adds to the season.
Yeah, 100%.
Because first you got to make it.
Yep.
Yeah, you got to make sure you get in. So it runs throughout the season. It's always on somebody's lips or mind, you know. So it adds to the overall show in general.
You know, and I think also at that time there was a lot more willingness to. I mean, I remember Jim Truman got Goodyear to buy an insurance policy that whoever won, if the same guy won Mid Ohio and Cleveland, they'd get $300,000. And that's a lot of money, right?
Yep.
You don't see that anymore.
Yep.
You know, and it yet wouldn't be that big of a deal. It's like buying hole-in-one insurance at a pro-am.
Yeah.
So you hope, you know, how do you give the weekends more content for the fans?
Yep.
You know, obviously for the teams as well. But things like getting extra engines to put in your spare car just for that purpose, I don't think that's that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. And if you really wanted to do something, there's no reason why you couldn't. Seriously.
Yeah.
I guess the last question on this, guys. So thinking about how special this was and how much fun it brought, where does this stand as a thing? Just again, I know we're just talking 6 years, a little thing that happened, but does this stand among all of your championships and wins and pride? Does your success in wins in the Marlboro Challenge still stand out as something like,
oh, yeah.
All right,
for
cool.
sure.
They
absolutely.
Narrowed down the field, so
absolutely.
For me to win that,
yeah,
that really meant something.
Yeah, like, absolutely, I mean, won two of them, and I talk about it, you know, two Marlboro Challenge wins. I mean, it's a big deal. It's like, you're because like Bobby said, you're running against the best of the best at that year that were running up front all year long, and if you're beating those, you're doing a pretty good job.
It's like qualifying, you know, a qualifying session, and to be able to sit on the pole qualifying, you know, everybody had the same chance, same opportunity, and they're at their absolute best for qualifying, you know, and if you can sit on the pole, it's good for your own ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bragging rights.
May not mean anything for the race, but it's good for your own ego.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think we can also pitch to Jay and Mark Miles kind of a seniors tour? You know, kind of senior? I mean, come on.
No,
I want to see you guys feed each other wheels.
Bad idea.
No?
Real bad idea.
No. Leyendijk's convinced he can climb in and beat everyone still.
Yeah,
so,
man. Go for it.
Yeah. I love the honesty.
We can talk about
it. I've had all the years.
He's been
all,
here, so God,
I've had,
that guy.
I've had all the fun I can
I'll
handle.
I'll be busy that weekend.
Yeah.
Look, I can run into myself. I don't need a Dutchman to do it for me.
I'd be out of breath by the time I got my belts connected.
For sure.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks once again to Michael, Rick, and Bobby. We're supposed to have Ari Leyendijk in there as well. I think Ari was busy doing something back 5 years ago. I don't remember what, but did see him in the paddock afterwards. It was like, hey, we missed you. He was like, sorry. I'm like, oh, not a big deal. We love you nonetheless. But thanks again to them and to all the folks from their teams who helped coordinate. Believe it or not, it's not that easy to get legends of the Andretti, Mears, and Ray Hall likes together the same time to do a podcast. So big thanks to everyone back then. Hopefully you enjoyed that. And let's see if and how Sunday's $1 million challenge at Thermal for $500,000 lives up to the standard set back in the day of the Marlboro Challenge.